This episode of Amateur Traveler is sponsored by Bombfell. If you're a guy, you hate shopping, but you want to look better, pay attention while I tell you later about Bombfell. I got my bags packed on a roll. I'm heading out there and I'm ready to go. Looking real good in my passport photo. Oh, no. Amateur Traveler, episode 581. Today we talk about bars and borscht, cathedrals and Chernobyl, and the short history of tractors as we go to Kiev in the Ukraine. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. We'll hear more from our sponsor in a bit, but first, let's talk about Kiev. I'd like to welcome to the show Amy Butler from thewayfarersbook.com. Amy has come to talk to us about Kiev in the Ukraine. Amy, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you, Chris.
And you are coming to us from Kiev right now. What led you to the city?
My story in coming to Kiev is a pretty random one. I was teaching English in New York and I wanted to travel. And I quit my job and started teaching English around the world. And to be honest, I'd never thought of Kiev before, but the guy I was dating at the time got a job offer here. So I said, sure, why not? Eastern Europe in February sounds like a great idea. So I arrived on a very cold, gray, rainy night. And at first I was not so sure what I had gotten myself into. But that was a year and a half ago. And now I've been here for over a year and I really, really like it. Turned out well in the end.
Why should someone come to Kiev?
People love coming to Europe, and people want to find undiscovered Europe, because with so many tourists coming to Europe, places like Paris and London and all the cities in Italy are so packed with people. Nobody is coming to Ukraine, and it's such a shame because it's a beautiful country, super diverse and really affordable here. I would say that if you're coming from a country with a strong economy, you're going to find an equivalent exchange rate to what you would find in Southeast Asia. So cheapest country in Europe, you should definitely come. You'll have like a luxury vacation on a dime.
Okay. And we should just talk about the elephant in the room. There are actually some people coming to Ukraine recently, and that is Russia. But Kiev is not in the middle of that.
No. Kiev is perfectly safe. I feel just as safe here as I do in New York City, where I'm from.
Okay. Excellent. And what do you recommend for a one-week itinerary in Kiev?
So if you come for a week in Kiev, you'll be able to see basically all the major sites. It's a very compact city. Mm-hmm. And what a lot of people don't know about Kiev is it's actually older than Moscow. It's one of the mm-hmm. oldest cities here in Eastern Europe. So you got ancient history. You obviously have communist history here. And one thing I love about Kiev is that they're making their own history now. So you have modern history with the Maidan Revolution in 2014. So whatever your interest is, if it's architecture, culture, history, food, you can get it all in Kiev.
Okay. And you said ancient history. Let's put a date on that. It was founded in the 5th century. And I think Moscow in the 10th century, about 5 centuries later, 10th or 11th. Don't hold me to that.
Yeah. I know the legend is that one of the rulers of Kiev, when he died, Yaroslav the Wise, I think it was, when he died, his sons started to fight over the land, as sons do back in the day. And one of the relatives went east, went towards Moscow, and eventually founded Moscow.
Well, and I actually had it Moscow older. Moscow isn't founded till the 1100s. It's founded after, as I recall, they kick out the Tartars. We'll save that for an episode on Moscow. So what are we doing in Kiev?
So when you come to Kiev, you can see ancient history in a lot of the churches, actually. Mm-hmm. It's one of the oldest buildings here in Kiev. You have one of the most holy sites in the Slavic countries, mm-hmm. Pechersk Lavra, which started out as a cave, a monastery, and has grown into this beautiful monastery complex, which was, of course, destroyed by the Soviets. But they've rebuilt it to its former glory, golden domes, mummified monks in the basement, in the caves that you can go visit.
But who doesn't have mummified monks in the basement? Pause there for a second. Mummified monks in the basement. So there is a crypt underneath the place where people are buried, which is not uncommon, but you can see the people who are buried underneath the church?
You can kind of see it.
Okay.
Yeah, it was originally a cave monastery, and the caves perfectly preserved like the bodies of the monks when they died in solitary confinement and things like that. So these monks are considered holy. Now they're mostly wrapped up in beautiful garments, but they're put in these glass coffins, and you walk around the caves, the tunnels, with a candle, and occasionally you'll see a little mummified hand sticking out from underneath the garb they've put it in, and it's full of pilgrims. Lots of pilgrims come there, so you'll see people praying over them and kissing them. The coffins, the glass coffins, you can't actually touch the mummies.
That's but, quite all right.
It's a unique experience, yeah.
Huh, interesting.
Yeah. So that's some of the ancient history. We have St. Sophia, which is a World UNESCO Heritage Site, and it has some beautiful mosaics in it from, I believe, the 11th century. So gorgeous, gorgeous building. Also, my favorite church in Kiev is St. Michael's, which is also, I think, like a 10th, 11th century church, also blown up by the Soviets, but was recently rebuilt in the 2000s. And the reason that I like St. Michael's so much is because of its modern history, actually. When the Maidan Revolution was going on in 2014, and the people were peacefully protesting in the main square, the first time that the police came and tried to brutally clear this peaceful protest, the protesters retreated to St. Michael's, and St. Michael's provided shelter for these protesters against the police and wouldn't let the police come in. And the bellboy asked permission to ring all of the bells in St. Michael's, which hadn't happened since the Tartar invasion in the 13th century.
Hmm.
It's very chilling to hear that in 2014, they rang all the bells and they hadn't done that for about 800 years. You get ancient history and modern history when you come to Kiev.
Hmm. Interesting. Excellent. Where to next?
So I would also recommend going to Yanukovych, the former president's estate. This is the president that was kicked out of the country. He still considers himself president wherever he is. But Yanukovych had this massive estate outside, kind of on the outskirts of Kiev. You have to take a taxi there or go on a tour. And it's just lavish, expensive, strange house with lots of different interior design, medieval art, modern art, Baroque art. So he has this massive estate, and it was only recently opened to the public once they kicked him out of the country. And this is something that a lot of the guidebooks are missing. A lot of the guidebooks for Kiev and for Ukraine in general are missing the recent 2014 revolution and the after effects of that. And they're also missing occupied Crimea. They still recommend you go to places like Donetsk, which you should not go to. But the places that I find super interesting right now are the places where the revolution happened. Yanukovych's estate, taking a look and seeing how much money this former president basically stole from the people and hearing stories of how Ukrainians came to the estate after he left and their jaws just dropped because they're living in poverty and their president has been siphoning away government money. And sort of just like learning that history that I don't think got reported very well when it was happening.
Yeah, all people are equal. Some are just more equal than others.
Exactly. And also, of course, going to Maidan, which is the main square in Kiev, they kind of talk about it as their Times Square. It's where all of the parades happen, all of the celebrations happen, and all the protests happen. They've actually had three revolutions since the start, since their independence, and they've all started in Maidan. And now if you go there, you can see people just enjoying their lives, which is really nice that people have been able to recover from a very traumatic experience in their history. But also you can see a memorial to the protesters who were killed during the Maidan Revolution a couple years ago.
Interesting. How are we getting around the city? We've got a number of different places so far.
Yeah, it's very easy to get around. I like to walk everywhere because I'm from New York, and so my default is to walk.
Sure.
Yeah. But the public transport is actually very, very efficient. The metro runs every 3 to 5 minutes. I think with the exchange rate, about 20 cents for a metro ride. So it's very, very affordable. Also, there are electric buses, there are trams, there are mini buses called marshrutkas, which I would not suggest travelers taking.
Because they're crowded and not all that comfortable?
Yes.
Yeah.
And they go at breakneck speed.
Yeah, we've talked about marshrutkas before in the Central Asian republics.
Yes. I don't even take those here. Stay away from those. But the rest of the Kiev public transport is very easy to use, very affordable. Also, we have Uber. So you can use Uber here. And there's another taxi app called Uklon, which I also use. If you're going to take a taxi, they're also very affordable. I've paid maximum $6, I think, to get around from one end of the city to the other. And that was during Uber price surges as well. Mm-hmm. Normally, it's $2 or $3 to get somewhere in the city in a taxi. But I would recommend using an app or calling a service. People don't normally flag them down on the street.
Let's take a break here and hear from our sponsor. As I mentioned, this episode is sponsored by Bombfell. That's Bombfell. What they offer is a personal stylist service for guys who want to look better but really don't like to shop. And that so includes me. And I had a chance to try the service. When you get started, you give them your measurements, and then they ask you some questions to try and determine your style. And they connect you with a stylist, in my case, Jasmine, who picked out three things for me. She picked out two shirts and a pair of jeans, and she sent me photos of those. If I didn't like those, we could make some changes right away. I accepted all of those. They sent them. I tried them on. I liked one of the shirts and the pair of pants, and you can see pictures on the website of what I picked out. So one of the shirts just didn't look right to me. The size wasn't quite right either. And so I sent it back, and you don't get billed until a week after you've had a chance to try them on. I just put it in the envelope that they included, took it off to a FedEx store, and it was just that simple. And then they would only bill you for the things that you keep. So Bombfell, Bombfell, is offering you a deal if you sign up through the Amateur Traveler. If you go to bombfell.com/traveler, you can save $25 on your first order. So thanks to Bombfell for sponsoring this episode. Okay, where to next?
Well, I would definitely say you need to spend some time eating, because Ukrainian food is great. There are a couple of places that do modern Ukrainian food. They're really trying to push the envelope beyond just sort of your typical borscht.
Okay. And when you say borscht, describe it for people, because this is not something that is, I think, that familiar to people. They've heard of it, but I don't know that most people have had it.
Borscht is a soup that's based off of beets normally. Mm-hmm. So it's normally a red soup, so there's a green version too. And it's usually got potatoes and often meat in it, some kind of typically pork, but there are other kinds of meat that they use. And you can get it vegetarian as well. And it kind of reminds me of tomato soup a little bit, but with beets instead of tomatoes. And that's one of the very, very typical dishes. Also, they have vareniki. And vareniki are dumplings, kind of like pierogies, kind of like ravioli, and they're stuffed with all sorts of different things, savory and sweet, so you can eat them for every single meal.
Your favorite is what?
Potato. Potato vareniki is my favorite.
That seems very traditional.
Yeah, it is very traditional. But besides the restaurants that are sort of pushing the boundaries in modern Ukrainian food, there's a lot of very good international restaurants here too. Georgian food is really popular here. I've had some really good Georgian food here. And the bar scene, their cocktails. If you're somebody who likes cocktails, you can come get an excellent, fancy cocktail using all sorts of crazy ingredients for $5 or $6. Maybe $7 if you're going to a really fancy place, which I'm from New York, so I'm used to paying like $18. Well, actually, I'm used to not buying cocktails. I just didn't buy cocktails in New York.
And is there a place that you would recommend for a good cocktail bar?
Yeah, for cocktails, I'd recommend the bar called Hendrix, which is actually a speakeasy. It's in the basement of a burger place called Chew Burger.
Okay.
Also recommend a place called Barman Diktat, which is off of the main street, Kroshatik. And you can find that address. Just go to Google Maps. You can type in Barman Diktat and it will come up.
And then you mentioned traditional food and more nouveau cuisine. Places you would recommend for either of those?
Yeah, so for a modern take on Ukrainian food, I'd recommend a restaurant called Kanapa, which is very, very popular. It's on a street called Andriy's Descent. So if you type in Kanapa, you'll also find it. And there's another excellent place. I can't say the Ukrainian name very well, so I'm just going to give you the English translation. It's called The Last Barricade, and it's underneath Maidan, and it's sort of like a hidden restaurant, and it's very proud of its Ukrainian history, proud of its location on Maidan, and it's got relics, I would say, for talking about a very Orthodox society, relics of the revolutions that they've had in Ukraine. So it's a very cool place to go to get a little bit of culture and taste some really good Ukrainian food.
Cool. Other sites we want to see or experiences we should try?
Well, of course, everyone asks about Chernobyl when they think about Kiev. I have been here for a year and a half, and I actually have not visited Chernobyl. And I know there are some controversial opinions. Is it too much radiation? Is it disrespectful to visit? I've known people who have gone, and no one has come back green, glowing, with a tail. So I would say
radiation-wise, I think that's probably not the big risk there. I think the big risk is what will happen to you 2 years from now or something like that. And I know they don't let you spend the night, and they don't let you consume food, I don't think, while you're in that area. Right. So it's probably pretty reasonable for a health risk, but I am not a doctor, so don't take my word for that.
Exactly. Yeah, I would never tell someone, go ahead, it's totally fine.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm not a nuclear scientist. And I told people, I think it's a personal decision if you want to go or not, if you want to take the risk or not. I've heard actually that, I don't know if that's true or not, but I've heard that if you become part of the European Union, you're not allowed to have tours to places of ecological disasters. So if you're someone who wants to see Chernobyl, if that's really important to you, it's something that you might want to consider in the next 5 years or so.
So if they join the European Union, which may or may not happen, then they may have to shut down the tours.
That's what I've heard.
Interesting. Worth looking into, too, at least if you're coming.
Exactly. You do have to go with a tour. I know some people are like, oh, I'm going to try and figure out how to do it on my own. No, go on a tour. Don't be an idiot. Go on a tour. It's worthwhile learning more about Chernobyl, even if you don't go to the site. There's a museum in the city that you can see, because it really was kind of the turning point for the Ukrainian people and the desire to leave the Soviet Union, which was something I learned when I got here. I didn't quite know how important that was to Ukrainian people, like the devastation they felt by sort of being deceived by the government. And that really pushed them to want to leave the Soviet Union, was the way that the government handled the Chernobyl disaster.
Sure.
So even if you don't go to the site, it's worth learning more about it and understanding the significance that played in the history here.
Well, and if people don't have current travel plans to Kiev and want to learn more about it, I would recommend, I've heard very good things about the documentary, The Babushkas of Chernobyl, which is about people who moved back into the exclusion zone and are living out their days there.
A lot of people I've heard, even though they were encouraged to evacuate, they just either didn't have a place to go, you know, or they stayed for too long, they feel now. And so now they feel like, what's the point of moving?
Right.
I've never heard of that documentary. I'll definitely check it out. That sounds
interesting. Yeah, one of the interesting things in terms of health reasons, if you're somebody who lived there, is there is obviously health concerns for staying because of contaminated radiation and things like that. But there are also health concerns for going because of being disconnected from home and family, and all of those things actually have legitimate health impacts as well. So it's a fascinating subject in terms of if you grew up there, do you stay or do you go? It's a very different thing than if you're a tourist, should you go? Cool. What else should we do while we're in Kiev or in the region?
If you have a week here, I would definitely say take a trip outside of Kiev. You can do most of the sites of Kiev, even with Chernobyl, in probably 5 days. So if you're coming for a full week, there are places you can get to within easy train rides. The train in Ukraine is very convenient, not always fast, depending on where you're going. But from Kiev, there are a lot of options where you can get to cities in 5 hours or so. Lviv is a very popular destination. There's a high-speed train that goes from Kiev to Lviv in about 5 hours. It's west, and it's very much like a picturesque, cutesy, central Eastern European vibe, because it's close to Poland. It's a little bit more central European feel in its architecture.
Okay.
Very romantic, very cute. People love going there. It's kind of Ukraine's Center for Coffee and Chocolate and Ukrainian Culture. They're very, very proud of their Ukrainian heritage there.
Interesting. What had you never done before you went to Kiev?
I never had tried to speak Russian before, before I came to Kiev.
How is your Russian coming?
It's very bad, unfortunately. I tried for a little while. But for tourists, for travelers and visitors here, it is important to think about the language when you come. If you come to Kiev, if you come to Lviv or Odessa, you won't have much of a problem, really, in tourist areas, especially in Kiev. Younger generations are taught the importance of English. They get it in schools. A lot of their parents reinforce it in extracurricular activities. So normally, restaurants will have English menus, English-speaking staff, and hotels will. But a lot of the signs are only in Ukrainian, so it can be a little bit difficult to navigate or understand the city if you only speak English or if you don't speak Ukrainian or Russian. But people shouldn't let that get in the way because Ukrainians are very, very friendly. I've had people help me every time I've been lost or confused. So if you're ever in doubt or lost, you can ask somebody on the street and they'll do their best to help you. But it isn't quite as accessible as some Western European countries to think about. Yeah.
And be honest, I found Russian a more difficult language to learn. Я понимаю по-русски не очень хорошо. What's the best way to get a good overview of the city, assuming you're busy the day that we come? Any particular tour or self-guided tour or a particular path you would walk?
I have a Lonely Planet, and despite it being a little bit outdated because it was printed, I think, actually in the middle of the 2014 Euromaidan revolution. It's very self-aware. It's like, we know this is happening and we don't really know what the outcome's going to be, but we're going to publish this guide anyway.
Yeah, well, the trouble with being a book publisher, yeah.
Yeah. I hope they get updated soon. But they do have a pretty good self-guided walking tour, I found. Yeah, and like I said, Kiev is a pretty compact city. So you can do self-guided tours, definitely. There are plenty of tour companies as well. And even though a lot of tourism here has been focused on the Russian and Ukrainian speaking population, because English tourists have been so few, they are starting to become aware about the growing English language market. And so you definitely have tours that cater to that and who cater towards English speakers. And because it's so affordable here, you can get a private tour for very little. My family just came to visit. So in Odessa, we did a walking tour, and I think it was $19 a person for like a 3-hour tour for four people, which is for a private tour, like that's $20 a person is pretty good. When I go on free tours, I'm usually tipping $5 to $10 anyway.
Sure.
I'm trying to think in Kiev, say it was $15 a person for our walking tour.
Okay.
Or something around that. And there's free options too. All the major cities, Kiev, Lviv, and Odessa, they do have walking tour options. Not every day of the week, but most days.
Okay. Other things that you want to mention?
I would just really want people to know that Ukraine is a great place to visit.
Not necessarily in February, I took it.
Yes. Yeah, maybe. I mean, coming for Christmas is actually a great option. Christmas here is fun, and they have two Christmases. Because they're an Orthodox country. So they actually celebrate Christmas on January 7th, which I loved. I went home, I had Christmas with my family, and then I came back and I had second Christmas in Ukraine.
Now, you say they celebrate two Christmases. Do they celebrate December 25th as well, or do they just celebrate the Orthodox? You weren't here.
I wasn't there, yeah, to be honest. I mean, if you're religious, you probably celebrate January 7th, the Orthodox. If you're non-religious, I think you're probably just happy you have off of work. Our company was closed for 2 weeks, so I took the time to travel back home and to do some traveling in Ukraine. They do start being festive in December, so you do get a good feel of the Christmas spirit if you're into that.
And what sort of things am I going to see? Decorations, Christmas markets? I don't know what a Ukrainian Christmas celebration would look like.
Yeah, we have some Christmas markets actually, which is a little bit surprising considering their recent independence and Soviet past, how quickly they got those Christmas markets up.
Hmm.
We had one in Kiev. There's a little road between St. Sophia and St. Michael's, which are like two of the major churches here. And they put up a Christmas market there. They had a little merry-go-round for the kids, festive lights, things like that. Stores will put up Christmas decorations, Christmas music for way longer than you want to hear it, actually. So you'll hear lots of Christmas music. Lviv also has a really nice Christmas market. They have a very cute city square. So they end up putting Christmas market stalls in their city square. So if you come for Christmas, I definitely recommend doing a little two-day trip to Lviv. It's a really cute city.
Somewhere that I have been traveling in the last month, and I don't know whether it was late August or early September, whether it was New York or Canada or Mexico or Europe, or because I've been traveling a fair amount, but was playing Christmas music. It's like, no, this is way, I think it was before Labor Day even, too soon.
One of the companies I teach at, their doorbell is Santa Claus is coming to town, and they've had this doorbell since June. Do they know this is the Christmas song? Do they? Nobody cares. Nobody cares it's a Christmas song. It always makes me smile, though, at 9 o'clock in the morning, so it's always good.
You mentioned the history around the revolution, and the recent revolution, and around Chernobyl. Any other history? A lot of people are interested in history from that communist time period where this was a little harder to get to, a little more foreign. Anything you would recommend for people interested in that time period?
Because Ukraine's history is really actually complicated.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned the Tartars and the Russians. Part of Ukraine was part of Poland at one point, actually part of Lithuania at one point.
Yeah, it's hard to think of the Lithuania as a world power, but it had its day. Yeah.
Yeah. The history of Ukraine, I mean, to be honest, it hasn't been its own independent country until 1991. There was a very, very brief movement of independence in the early 1900s. They didn't really have the chance because they had world powers all around them taking land. So to really understand Ukrainian history from the Soviet time, from before that, when there were Tartars and Cossacks and Russians and Poles all taking grabs of the land, I'd recommend doing some reading. Something that really helped me understand Ukrainian history was reading the book Borderlands.
Mm.
So I would recommend reading the book Borderlands by Anna Reid. It's a really easy-to-read history book. And it starts from the founding of Kiev and when it was sort of like a city state called Kiev Rus up until, I forget exactly when she ends. She ends before the Euromaidan revolution, but it does give a very comprehensive history from the founding of Kiev to after independence from the Soviet Union. And it helped me so much sort of understand history, culture, mentality of Ukraine and the Ukrainian people. In addition to that, there's a couple of novels that I have read that have sort of given me an interesting insight into Ukrainian history.
Mm-hmm.
There's one called A Short History of Tractors in Ukrainian.
Okay.
It's more of like a sort of funny family drama about a Ukrainian family living in England and these two adult sisters trying to convince their elderly dad not to marry a young Ukrainian woman. They're Ukrainian as well. And their elderly dad meets this Ukrainian, young Ukrainian woman. He's a widower. And so he falls in love and just sort of like the family politics there. It's a light novel, but she does pull out the family history of their escape from Ukraine in the Soviet times and the government control and the hunger, because Ukraine went through a famine because Stalin took all of the grain and all of the harvest and brought it to Moscow. So Ukraine has had a very, very traumatic history. And the novel digs into that a little bit and what people did to survive. So that novel was a good, easy way to get a little bit more insight into Ukrainian history. Also, Everything is Illuminated is a great book as well. It's set in Ukraine. Sort of a fantastical book, but it does dive into some of these difficult culture clashes that happened because Ukraine was so multicultural and so diverse in its history. It struggled a lot with that as well. So I would say reading definitely helps you sort of make sense of all of the power changes, the culture clashes, the border lines that shifted, all of that sort of thing.
Excellent. Before we get to our wrap-up questions, other things we should know before we go to the Ukraine?
So one important thing, it's very, very practical, but I always tell people because I made this mistake. If you come to Ukraine and you change your money from your currency to hryvnia, which is the local currency, it's hard to change it back. Uh-huh. It's almost impossible to change your money back. So don't overchange your money and think, oh, I just want to make sure I've got enough. And then you have $100 left over and you can't change it back. Because I made that mistake my first time here. Be judicious when you change your money. It's always something important to think about.
Actually, I should get back to time of year to visit. You mentioned Christmas. Is there another best time to visit or best festival to see in Kyiv?
I'd say spring, summer, fall, those are all great times to visit. Stay away from the really, really cold months unless you're coming for Christmas. Mm-hmm. There's no need to come here in March, to be honest. It doesn't really matter how cheap it is. You can still have a really good vacation if you come here in the winter. There's plenty to do inside. But I would say to get the most out of your visit, it's good to come here in spring and summer. Because they do have a lot of nice green spaces. You can really enjoy the parks here. They love being outside in the summer when the weather's nice. Kyiv is on a river, so you can like rent a boat and go down the river. Festivals, there are festivals here. There's some music festivals. I'm not as familiar, but even though they're not big, there's always something going on. I'm never bored in the city. This weekend, there is a cocktail show. So there's a cocktail festival.
It's becoming a theme here, Amy.
Yeah, there's a cocktail show. There's a vintage car show at the Airplane Museum. So there's an outdoor airplane museum. They're going to bring vintage cars there. There's an animation festival featuring new and old animation that is subtitled in English. So like that's okay for a tourist to go to too. There's just always something happening. Even if it's not a big festival, you can always find a food festival or a flea market or something to do.
Well, and just to put a date on this, we're recording this at the last weekend in September of 2017. So that's the kind of things you'd find going on in early fall, I guess. Excellent. You're standing in the prettiest spot in all of Ukraine. Where are you standing and what are you looking at?
In all of Ukraine, I'm probably staying in the Carpathian Mountains.
Carpathian Mountains. Where would you recommend to go in the mountains?
So if you come in winter, sort of the biggest ski resort, if you're coming for skiing, is Bukovo.
Okay.
And I would recommend that just because it may not be like the most off the beaten track. There'll be tourists around, but they'll be mostly Ukrainian or local regional tourists. Infrastructure in other parts of Ukraine tourist infrastructure isn't as developed. Mm-hmm. And so go to the developed places. You can go to the big tourist places. They will figure out your transfers, how to get you to the resort. So Bukovil, if you're into skiing, and even actually in the summer, I've seen pictures and it's very beautiful. When I was there in the spring, I did a horseback riding trip in the like southern Carpathians. And it was really beautiful. We had terrible weather, so it rained, but there were times where the rain kind of cleared and it was just misty and I felt like I was in Lord of the Rings. And there's nobody else around. And that's one of the amazing things about Ukraine is that there are no tourists here. So except for Lviv, there's always tourists in Lviv, but you really get to feel like you are in a new place in Europe, which having that feeling is so hard. Europe is so well on the beaten path. So to be able to come to Europe and have an affordable vacation where you feel like you're experiencing something new. I stayed with a dairy farmer and I got to see a 17-year-old boy hand churning butter. That really happened still. I got to see it. And that was a once in a lifetime experience for me. And that's what Ukraine is. Ukraine is once in a lifetime experiences over and over and over again for me.
Now back to the question I meant to ask, which is you're standing in the prettiest spot in Kyiv. Where are you standing? What are you looking at?
I'm probably looking at St. Michael's, which is that church that was destroyed by the Soviets that they rebuilt. It's not the biggest church, maybe not even the prettiest church, but it's this beautiful light blue gold domes. And there's just a feeling there that it's something special. You just feel it when you're there. looking at St. Michael's, that this is a place important in history and important now, too.
Excellent. One thing that makes you laugh and say only in Kiev.
There's a there's a woman. You can find anything you need to buy in Kiev underpasses. They set up these little shops in Kiev underpasses under main streets. There's no streetlights, so you just walk underneath. And there's a woman in one of the underpasses near me that sells meat out of a cardboard box. And only in Kiev could you find somebody standing on the street selling meat out of a cardboard box, and people are stopping and buying it. I don't understand, but...
Huh.
Yeah.
Well, that's a first. That is an answer we have not had before. So. Okay.
Yeah. And that makes me laugh.
Under the overpasses just to stay out of the rain or the sun?
I think because in the underpasses, it's just become spots of commerce.
Huh.
Most underpasses, even if they don't have little shops or stalls set up, people will bring tables and they'll set up. And I guess because it's out of the way of the elements.
Huh. Okay.
But whenever I can't find something in a normal store, I'd be like, oh, I can probably find it in an underpass. And usually I do.
I have never said that. I'm fairly sure. And finally, if you had to summarize Kiev in three words, what three words would you use?
Undiscovered, hip, and hospitable.
Excellent. Excellent. Our guest again has been Amy Butler from thewayfarersbook.com. Amy, if we wanted to send somebody to your best post on Kiev, where would we send them?
I have a post about 48 hours in Kiev. Mm-hmm. So I would say check that out. That kind of has the highlights of what I suggest you should do if you're only here for 2 days. And poke around the website for more if you're here for longer, because I've got lots of stuff up about Kiev and Ukraine in general.
Excellent. Well, we'll be linking at least to that post and to your website as well. Thank you so much for coming on Amateur Traveler and sharing with us your love for Kiev.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
In news of the community, I'm heading to India soon with some of you, which should be a great fun. And then we are putting some finishing touches on the itinerary for 2018 to Central Europe. There's a couple events the early part of September that we're looking to be there for. So check out amateurtraveler.com/trips for more information about that. With that, it's getting late here, so we're going to end this episode. If you have any questions, send an email to host@amateurtraveler.com, or better yet, leave a comment on this episode at amateurtraveler.com or in the Facebook group, facebook.com/amateurtraveler. And thanks so much for listening.